You can probably find seats over here, gentlemen, if you wish. With that, good morning to everyone. Our first case of the day is FTR Farms, Inc. versus Rice Farm, Inc. And is it Mr. Dyer?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jesse Dyer, and I'm with Wolf Snowden. I represent Rice Farm in this appeal from the District Court of Richardson County. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The ultimate question in this case is how 311 acres of farmland should be partitioned. That is, should it be by partition in kind or by sale? The District Court ordered the property sold. Rice Farm contends that in ordering this harsh result, the District Court erred in at least 3 ways. First, the District Court erred in its determination that it did not have the authority to award ALTI to make partition in kind equitable. The Nebraska Supreme Court, in 3 partition cases, has recognized the authority of the District Court to award ALTI. That is, in Zorns v. Zorns, in Ray McKillop, in Lynch v. Lynch. To be sure, this court in those cases did not use the word ALTI, but it did recognize the authority of the District Court to make equalization payments to make partition in kind equitable. And that's all ALTI is. It's an equalization payment within a partition proceeding. These cases demonstrate that the authority to award ALTI is inherent in the broad equitable powers of the court. A statute specifically authorizing ALTI is not necessary, contrary to what the District Court suggested below.
Again, some states authorize it by statute?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. Some states. The Overlake Farms case is one we cite in there, and that's a Washington case. And in that case, Your Honor, there is a statute authorizing ALTI. Other states, though, so Nebraska is not unique in this way, like Kansas and Oklahoma, and I do cite those cases, they recognize that the authority to award ALTI is within the broad equitable powers of the court.
Let's assume that we agree with you that ALTI is permissible. Why was it proper here? Particularly, is it something that we can consider what the actual sale prices were and the allocation between the tracts and the sale prices?
I think so, Your Honor. There was an appraisal by Ms. Janelle Moore. She was an expert who testified below, the only expert, and she appraised the 2 tracts of property separately. So she gave the north side a value and the south side a value, and she subtracted those numbers, and the result was $215,000. And so that's the...
When the tracts were sold, however, when they were put up for sale, we don't know exactly from our record, because there wasn't testimony precisely as to what each tract was, the high bid was, but we know it was either a $240,000 or a $280,000 difference between the tracts. How does that impact into our analysis?
I think the focus of the court should be at the time that the court made its decision, and the expert testimony that the court based its decision on, and what the difference between the 2 values of land were. I think that the court can base its decision on those appraisals.
I don't disagree with you that had the district court elected partition in kind, that would have been the obvious number. But we're past that. We went down the route of sale, and we know more about values than we did from the appraisals, don't we?
I suppose there is additional evidence now that we've seen a sale of the property, of indicating what the value of the property is. To the extent that new evidence, may confuse the issue about how much the difference in the value is. There could be a remand. The court did err in its decision that it did not have the authority to award alty, and so certainly I think reversal is warranted in this case. And so there could be a remand with instructions to the district court to properly consider the facts with alty. And there are several cases, not Nebraska cases, that I cite where this is precisely what happens.
With that kind of remedy, is that really strictly alty, or is alty prior to a sale?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You're saying the relief that you would seek here, is this correct, would be a reversal and a remand to fix the dollars. Is that what you just asked for?
Your Honor, I am asking for complete relief. I think that the court does have the authority to award complete relief, and that is just simply order partition in kind with alty along the Little Nemaha River, the north side going to FTR Farms, the south side going to Rice Farm. But alternatively, there could, Your Honor, yes, be a reversal.
So with respect to that former suggestion, is that feasible in real life to unwind a sale?
Yes, Your Honor, I think so. And in fact, that's the only way that we can seek review. This court doesn't get jurisdiction until the sale is made and confirmed. And so that would defeat review. And there are many cases where the sale is undone. In Ray McKillop would be an example. This court reversed an order of sale. But again, there are many cases outside of Nebraska where that precisely is what happens.
Counsel, at least at the time of the hearing on partition in kind versus sale, your client took the position that potential capital gains taxes were a concern. Do you maintain that had anything to do with this case?
I emphasize a number of factors.
There wouldn't be any capital gains tax in this case, would there?
I don't disagree with that, right, Your Honor.
But assume we throw in with you, what happens to the expenses that were incurred below?
You're saying,
I'm asking, what's your proposal about what we would do with respect to the expenses that were incurred for the referee? Now, some of them haven't been yet incurred, but some have.
As the winning party, Your Honor, I think that it would be appropriate to charge it to the appellee in this case. But I would defer to Your Honor sitting in equity to make that decision.
How do you respond to the cross appeal in this case?
My reaction to that brief, Your Honor, is that it doesn't take a position one way or the other on what should happen in this case. You're referring to the Dowell's brief.
I'm referring to the Dowell's brief, and is that right? They have a claim that they have a PMSI, purchase money security interest in all this.
Yes, Your Honor, and there was a joint stipulation entered below where the Dowell's agreed to allow both parties to issue renewal notes, and so that would mean that you would split up the deed of trust, and then proportionate amounts of property would be subject. Then you would have two mortgages, and so I think that would be a good way to resolve.
Do you think that stipulation is still binding at this point?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. And there's a few things that I could say about that. I know that in the brief, again, there's not an argument made one way or the other for partition kind, or even what the significance of the fact that there is this mortgage on the property, and now they're saying that they're not bound by that any longer because there was a default. I would say the fact that there's a default isn't even in evidence, and it's inappropriate to introduce on appeal new evidence, much less through your brief. And so I think that this court's decision needs to be based on the record before it, and that's simply not in the record. And then I don't think that there's any issue with, let's suppose the stipulation was no longer binding. I think that it is. This property is not underwater, so the debt is less than the mortgage and or the value of the property. So it would be very easy to obtain refinancing. So I don't think in any sense that the fact that there's a mortgage on the whole property renders partitioning kind legally impracticable.
Before your time totally expires, under our test, traditional test for great prejudice, is there some minimal threshold? I mean, there's no doubt here the whole sold for more than the mm-hmm. tracks. Would the high bid on the two tracks added together, is that evidence of great prejudice?
Just real quick, and I think this gets to a basic issue here. Great prejudice doesn't deal with equality at all. It just deals with whether partition kind would destroy the value of the property. 2182 is what deals with equality, good and sufficient reasons, and that sort of thing. So when you're discussing whether there should be like a maximum value difference between the two properties, you're looking at 2182, and the analysis there is first whether the two tracks are nearly as possible of equal value. That's not what we're contending. So then you go to the exception to that general rule, and you analyze whether there are good and sufficient reasons for the arrangement that we're proposing. And there clearly are. Again, the south side is something that Rice Farm, Timothy Rist, farmed almost exclusively. He derives part of his livelihood from this land. He has a sentimental attachment to it. He's improved it, invested himself into it. He derives pride from it. And in fact, I would say that partition in kind merely preserves what the status quo is, what the parties have been doing since 2011. FTR Farms farmed the north side.
With the chief's indulgence, I'd like to ask you one more question.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that has to do with your third assignment of error. No one presented any evidence to the trial court, or no evidence is in our record of any potential division in kind other than along the Little Nemaha River, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's correct. There's no evidence specifically on point, but I would say with respect to Ms. Janelle's testimony, she testified generally as a general matter that dividing the property into two tracks would not destroy the value of the property, that is, result in great prejudice to the owners. And so I think the court has a little latitude.
But this case is different than McKillop, which had separated tracks some distance apart. Here we've got one tract divided by a river.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's a great reason for partitioning kind. We have a natural, convenient boundary in the Little Nemaha River.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
During these proceedings, did the appellant offer to take the smaller parcel of land?
We didn't specifically, Your Honor, request the other side, but we didn't take an all-or-nothing approach. Mr. Timothy Rice, in his testimony, said that he'd be willing to take any side, if the court feels that way, is the language that he used, Your Honor.
So that's what's in the record, is the testimony, that's where that comes from, that he said he would take the smaller parcel?
He said he would be happy with either parcel. Yes, Your Honor.
Before you sit down, is there another party that should have been part of this lawsuit, the purchaser?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I suppose my position would be that you're able to make the decision now. Although I concede, I don't believe that they are a party to this case.
There would have been no way to make them a party before the sale.
That's right, Your Honor. Okay. We wouldn't have known who that person was.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Davis, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court.
My name is Jeff Davis. I'm here on behalf of FTR Farms. Mr. Mike Dunn is here on behalf of the Dowells, and I'd like to take 3 minutes of the time allotted to the appellee to reserve for him to present his case. So I'll go for 7 minutes and Mr. Dunn for three. Most of the talk in the appellee, in the appellant's presentation was about this concept of OLT or OLT. I'm not entirely sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I think you know what I'm talking about. This concept of an equalization payment in a partition action where you have two parcels that aren't of equal value. We got a little bit towards the end into great prejudice and whether great prejudice exists in this case, and those are sort of the two points that I'd like to spend my time focusing on this morning while being responsive to any questions that you have. The appellant claims that the concept of owlty is recognized in Nebraska appellate jurisprudence as an inherent equitable power of the court, and they cite to three cases where this concept was supposedly applied, the Zorns case, the McKillop case, and the Lynch case. McKillop and Lynch we deal with in our brief as to how those cases are quite a bit different factually from this case. Zorns, along the same lines, it's a more recent case, a 2015 case, but it's a conversion case that ends up with the court partitioning promissory notes. So you have a partition of personal property rather than real property, and you have a piece of personal property that's essentially a negotiable instrument, so it has a readily ascertainable market value, makes the concept of some sort of equalization payment more easy to apply and more fair to apply and less speculative to apply in that sort of a case.
So can we consider the sale values in appraising retrospectively the partition in kind versus partition by sale decision?
I think that's one of the problems with the doctrine of owlty is the court would have to apply it. The court would have to make that partition in kind rather than a partition by sale without the benefit of that additional information. Here we kind of do have the benefit of hindsight. We do know, as you pointed out in your discussions with counsel, that when this thing actually went to auction, the whole brought more than the sum of the parts. A trial judge having to make the decision as to whether to partition something in kind or by sale wouldn't have the benefit of that information that we have here.
What do you make of our case law that's spoken of the preference? And in some of the older case law, very strong preference for partition in kind.
It's true. That's what the case law says, that there is a preference for partition in kind. But that preference can be overcome by a showing of great prejudice.
And that leads into your...
Which leads into the next point. But just in general, you know, land is a unique... You know, certainly, look at the Zorns case. Partitioning promissory notes. I've got a promissory note due to me worth $100,000. I'll give you 50 and I'll take 50. That's easy. Land isn't quite that simple. You know, we do have the natural boundary here of the Little Nemaha River, but that leaves us with two pieces of property that have different total acres, that have different soil types, that have a history of different yields. So while partition in kind is favored in our case law, as a practical matter, how do you draw the line in a way that's equitable and fair to all the parties? And I think that's what trial courts have to struggle with. And if we go back to this doctrine...
I beg your pardon, but historically that's not insurmountable. That if you were, say, to partition into two pieces, they may have different characteristics.
They may have different characteristics.
That's garden variety partition.
True. If you've got you can envision a case where you have a quarter section of bottom ground that's flat all across, and you can draw a line down the middle of that pretty fairly, I think, and say these you're getting similar character property, and more importantly, for the great prejudice analysis, similar value property. No one in this case argues that if you draw that line along the Little Nemaha River, that you get two pieces of property of equivalent value. And you can envision all sorts of hypotheticals where you can cut property in one way or another, but you know, we don't have a hypothetical here. We have an actual piece of property that has an actual natural divider that actually went to an auction. So we actually know what an actual third party was willing to pay for it, which gives us the benefit of more than just appraisals and expert testimony. We, as the Chief pointed out, I believe, Nebraska does not have any statutory authority for courts to order owlty, and counsel pointed out that Washington State does, in a case that they cited in their brief. There's at least two other states that I could find that do have, and I'm sure there's more, but that do have specific statutory authority authorizing courts to award owlty, and those are Alabama and Michigan. But in both of those cases, the appellate courts in those states have said, proceed with caution. The Alabama courts have held that owlty should be used sparingly and with great caution. And Michigan, the courts in Michigan have held that the principle of owlty should be employed as little as possible. And I think that's precisely because what I was saying earlier in sort of the conversation that we were having, Justice, is that at the time that the court has to make that determination, what does the court have to rely on? Well, the court has appraisals, the court has expert testimony, the court has testimony of the parties. But you know, when the rubber meets the road, what's a piece of property really worth? It's worth what someone's willing to pay for it. And you don't have that bit of information in your pocket at the time when you have to make that decision.
So to what extent does the fact that the ultimate sale price was considerably less than either of the expert appraisals, how does that enter into our analysis?
Well, I think it depends on how you look at it. If you're looking at it from the point of view of the trial court, of course, wouldn't have known that that's what was going to happen, which, again, I think emphasizes a problem with this doctrine of applying equalization payments. You know, how is this court supposed to analyze that? I think the ultimate point in the analysis of what the sales price did is, just as you pointed out, that the whole of the property brought more in value than either individual part. And that's the very definition in Trowbridge of great prejudice. When a party would receive under a partition in kind materially less than the share that he would have received of his undivided interest in the whole. Of course, how you're going to apply that analysis, I don't know yet. But I think that goes back to being, you know, sort of the fundamental problem with this doctrine of having to prospectively and speculatively decide what a piece of property is worth when we can decide what it's worth by seeing what someone's willing to pay for it.
Is there or do you have an understanding of how prevalent alty is by virtue of court rulings rather than statute?
Well, in Nebraska, it's not prevalent at all. I concede counsel's point that Kansas and Oklahoma, it's judicially recognized. And in other jurisdictions, there's jurisdictions seem to be all over the map. In other jurisdictions, it is statutorily authorized but judicially discouraged.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, I will defer to Mr. Dunn. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dunn, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice and members of the court. My name is Mike Dunn, and I represent the appellees Eugene Wesley Dow and Mary L. Dow, and actually myself as the trustee under the deed of trust. I was named as a defendant in this action also. First off, I'd like to point out that there is evidence of the default, contrary to the appellant's statement. Exhibit 20 in the record shows that we had made demand for the payment of the 2018 payment, and that on November 30th, a default was declared. And since that time, this note has begun drawing interest at the rate of 10%, which is good rate for the market today. But it is, in fact, in default, and that is shown in the record. We don't have a dog in the fight about which way the court goes with this, other than we believe that our stipulation is no longer binding upon us because of the default, which occurred prior to the court's confirming the sale in this matter. For that reason, we're asking that the court either determine that our lien is a complete lien upon the whole property if you choose to divide in kind, or it is to be paid first behind the plaintiff's fees and the referee's fees in this case. Either way, we believe that we're entitled to payment at this time because the note is in fact in default, and that is in the record. The court, in determining oity, if you should decide to partition in kind, I believe that there should be some consideration made to the appellant that he did make his share of the payment on our note, so that could be taken care of in that. And if you remand it for the district court to make a decision of how that's paid, then we can put evidence into other payments that have been made. But that's not before the court at this time. But I think that those payments that have been made on our note have to be taken into consideration in determining how this matter is handled if partition in kind is ordered. We would simply ask that the court recognize my client's first lien. Exhibit 3 shows that there's a parties admitted the note, the deed of trust. It's been a first lien on the property the entire time, and we believe it should be paid either by the parties when they receive the partition in kind, or from the proceeds of the sale if it is confirmed.
If we were to partition in kind, what should happen to the expenses that have been incurred in the partition process thus far?
Well, I would assume that the parties would have to somehow divide that. The problem is we may have one party who's not very capable of doing it, but I don't know as the evidence in the record of the ability to pay is there.
Thank you very much. I don't believe we have any time for rebuttal.
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Donlinger versus Nelson.